Welcome to First Things First. I am Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a great show for you this morning. 3 hours of a great show. Can Drew Brees and the Saints offense carry their struggling defense? Can the Vikings defense slow down the Rams on Thursday Night Football? And who isn't worried about the Cowboys' slow start? Those are the questions. Here are all the answers. There is no finger pointing in Dallas these days. No subtle hints. And who is to blame for a disappointing start to the Cowboys season? With an offense that ranks second to last in points per game, a quarterback that has yet to throw for 200 yards, and a usually stout offensive line that has already given up 11 sacks, the Cowboys offense is your culprit. But if you ask owner Jerry Jones, it's not time to hit the panic button just yet.
I think we've seen Dak really compete and do well with what we want him to do in areas that Dak can play better in. We've seen him perform those things and do it well. And we've seen him do it this year. But we've just got to put it together.
All right, CeCe, I know it's kind of a loaded question, but how do the Cowboys now turn the season around? What is the biggest key for them to do that?
Well, based on Jerry's comments and everything, and very few owners you're going to see they're going to manage like Jerry Jones does. And Jerry's been successful his business life. He just hadn't been successful at football in a long, long time. But a lot of times when you have early career success, young athletes, young people, entrepreneurs, it's hard to sometimes realize that because you've been so successful or in very, very little of experience, you take it for granted. And what Jerry has done the last 25 years, he's taken it for granted. Dak Prescott is not the type of quarterback that right now is going to be able to win a championship in the NFL. There are too many good throwers of the football. Now, Jerry, he keeps making these excuses because he said Dak is doing exactly what we want him to do, right?
Yep.
So the reason why they don't have any big plays was because Dallas has told Dak, we don't want no big plays. All right, we got one long completion to a scat back, a change of pace guy in Austin. None of our wide receivers, we can get them open down the field. So I don't like where Jerry is, and I don't like him making excuses week after week about the Dallas offense or lack of offense and their quarterback. If he was the owner like when Troy Aikman, he'd be like, man, where are the big plays? Because when they won Super Bowl trophies, that's what they had. They had a very good defense that was underrated, but they grind it out with you and make big plays through the passing game. That's what Dallas used to do. Jerry's not doing that anymore. They're not forcing Dak to do that. So they're playing a game that's very, very easy for the defense. All we have to do is limit Zeke. Not take him away. Let's limit Zeke and make someone else beat him. And Dallas doesn't have anyone, not a tight end, not a wide receiver, that would put any type of threat in the NFL defense. So it's going to be tough sled. And if Jerry, if he's going to keep the bar very low for his quarterback in Dak, I believe that their achievement as a team will be very, very low.
And Scott Linehan and the offensive staff is not doing this team any favors with that. Not only the types of plays they're calling, which is what Chris is talking about, where they're not even trying deep shots down the field, but the ratio of plays they're calling. Since Dak and Zeke came into the league, in games that mattered, so just throughout the Week 17 game that they didn't care about in 2016, if Dak has 25 or fewer attempts, they're 10-0. In every other game, they're 13-11. So, like, we know what the numbers say.
So that's the model.
That's the model. Flip it to the other side. When Zeke, when they have as many rushing plays as passing plays or greater, more rushing plays than passing plays, they're 16-0. Otherwise, they're 7-13. Now, I understand sometimes that is you already have a lead, so you're running it late to salt away the game. Some of that is misleading, but a lot of that is they got the lead by Zeke being dominant. This year, I couldn't believe this stat. Dusty showed this to me this morning. The Cowboys are number one in the league this year on yards per carry before contact. So before you have to break a tackle, before you have to have any special type of your running back's ability, they're first in the league. And yet they are middle of the pack to below average in number of rushing attempts. That makes no sense. I get why Pittsburgh right now is basically saying, we're just going to throw the football. They, Le'Veon Bell's not there. They have a dynamic passing attack. They have excellent weapons. I get why the Chiefs would do that, why the Patriots would do that. It would be different reasons for each of those teams, but I understand it. The fact that the Cowboys are giving Zeke the ball 16 times per game is absurd. And what it is, when you combine that with no deep shots, they are relying on what we talked about before the season, Jen, as being so hard. 12 play drives, 14 play drives. Right. And if you don't have Drew Brees out there, who is going to complete 75% of his passes,
yes,
and you're trying to just do 4 or 5 yards at a time, you're going to have an incompletion. You're going to have a missed pass. Now it's 3rd and 8 and shortly after you're punting.
Look, it's definitely a head-scratcher why Zeke hasn't gotten the ball more when clearly he's the bulk of their offense. They don't have anyone else for Dak to really throw the ball to, whether that's on him or whether that's it's on the receivers. But earlier before the season started, we talked about them changing or tweaking Zeke's role a little bit and using him more in the pass-catching lane. Is that something that could help them out a little bit just to ignite something, let him catch a few of the balls?
It is, but they're keen on Zeke so much. Like, I thought they would be able to throw the ball outside some. They are keen on Zeke in the running game, also in the passing game. You always have to have, if you have a running back like Zeke, like L. Bell would be, just like Todd Gurley is, like these running backs, you have to have them in the passing game. But back to Nick's point as far as Dallas leads the NFL, as far as yards before contact, I bet they lead the NFL in 8-man boxes too. So now, so it lets you know the offensive line's playing well.
Zeke is run blocking well.
Yeah, Zeke is doing his job as far as when he gets the attempts. It's everything else. It's the quarterback and the other guys that aren't supporting them. So, yes, you can continue. You have to throw the ball to Zeke. But everything, it's like when you start a meal. Like, you need a good, good piece of meat. If that being fish, chicken, beef, pork, whatever you're going to have.
Tofu, anything.
And whatever it is. Whatever is the main ingredient in tofu. That, let me tell you, that's who Zeke is. And you can't get away from that. But I'm going to steal a little point from you, Nick. You said their record's 10-0 when he throws the ball 25 times or less.
Exactly.
Okay,
right.
Listen, I need 8 of those throws to go past 40 yards.
Well, that's, and that, by the way, would help Zeke's numbers in the passing game. Zeke's been targeted more than any receiver on the Cowboys. He's been targeted 18 times. He has 11 catches. They only have 37 yards on those 11 catches, 3.5 yards per catch. Why? This is, they're playing in a phone booth.
Yes.
If you're not sending your receivers deep, when can the running back catches be the most effective if they're not a Le'Veon Bell that's just going to run, line up as a receiver and run a route? It's when your receivers are going deep down the field, clearing out the defense, then those swing passes or screen passes, there's open space. When everyone is running these button hooks and crossing routes, when you throw it to Zeke, he's got 4 defenders already around him. So they, like, that is, if they, your point, take some shots.
Yes.
Take some, and in today's league, with the pass interference penalties, with the
roughing the passer, quarterback holds the ball a little bit more, he's protected. And with the pass interference, a lot of good things can happen. I need 2 deep shots. That's why the number's 8, Nick. Mm-hmm. I need 2 per quarter. Because if you throw only 4 deep balls in a game, the NFL is not going to take you serious. Right now, they're not taking Dak and the passing attack of the Cowboys serious, so it makes it harder. But from a design standpoint, I don't even believe that they can – that they start the game with the right design to win. The Cowboys do not know how to win with this team that they have. Because Zeke should touch the ball 25 times. He should have at least 20 rushes a game. And you have to be able to take some deep shots because that would help out that really good defense that they have.
Well, we'll see what Jason Garrett does with Zeke in that offense. The Cowboys host the Detroit Lions coming up this weekend. On the other side here, will the New Orleans Saints defense derail their season? That's next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
We will get to Drew Brees in a second, but first, guys, watch this. Yankees, Rays, Aaron Judge at the plate. Think fast. That was 109 miles per hour with the comeback.
That's terrifying. That is, Jenna, great job getting the actual numbers there. Coming back at him 109. And I mean,
back to your fundamentals, Nick. Right-hand pitcher, you got to fall off straight to the mound. If not, that's a dangerous play right there. Great reaction.
And you see the pitcher afterwards, once when he doubles over, he realizes how close that was to disaster.
Even Aaron Judge was surprised.
Everybody. Oh, my goodness. That's a hell of a play.
Moving on. Texas's Seven Lakes Junior High School. This is junior high. Watch the quarterback fight off a few tackles, get the balls out, and the wide receiver makes a great catch. Just nicely done.
There's some athletes on that field.
Well, you see that
that's a junior high schooler
catching
the ball.
Hey, watch this roughing the passer here at the end, too, on 34. Oh, he gets a lick in there. Good defense. Great catch.
Let me see what you're talking about with 34.
Watch him come
in late.
Jack. Oh, my gosh. I love it.
That's a suspension in the NFL in Texas seventh grade football. It's good job, Jimmy.
Right.
All right, finally, high school football out of Georgia now. This is Villarica Wildcats. Mecose Todd goes full beast mode for the touchdown. Watch him take it all.
I've seen this a few times. That's the way Adrian Peterson looked in high school. That's the way Leonard Fournette looked in high school. It's like, who put that grown man on the field with these kids?
That's the type of thing where you don't blame some parents of the opposing team if they pull their kid off the field. No. You're not trying to tackle this guy. Now, if we play the rest of the – if we let this run, watch at the end. He's about to score. There's a bit of a unnecessary block right – oh, take that, kid.
Yeah. That was a nice little blocking behind the play. Can't do that in the NFL anymore either.
Nope.
Hey, kids, we got bad news for you. If you make it to the NFL, they're not hitting anymore.
I know. Put your flags back on. Moving on to the Saints now. Is it too much to ask of Drew Brees to score 60 points a game, every game moving forward? Because their defense is bad. Their 34.3 points allowed per game are the worst in the NFL. And now this veteran cornerback, Patrick Robinson, former first-round pick, will be placed on injured reserve with a broken left ankle. CeCe, can the Saints' offense overcome their deficiencies on defense?
For one, people should know Patrick Robinson's a really good player. Last season, voted by Pro Football Focus, one of the best slot cornerbacks that we have. And when you start evaluating secondaries now, you can't evaluate an NFL defensive backfield secondary without evaluating who their nickel, that means their fifth defensive back, and who their dime players are. Because NFL's teams are playing over 60% of the time, they're playing nickel. So you need someone like Patrick Robinson, guys that are tweeners. He's not necessarily the best corner outside. He couldn't play safety, but he's somewhere in between because they can guard tight ends, they can guard running backs, and occasionally they can guard wide receivers in the slot. So it's a very, very useful position now in the NFL, far more popular now and necessary than at any other time. A lot like the slot receiver is a necessary evil for all teams. Drew Brees is one of the few guys, though, that I believe that they can do it. I spent a lot of time, because I covered this game, spent time with the Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, and he's concerned. He's not only concerned about their injuries, but he's concerned about the overall maturity in the defensive backfield of the Saints. He doesn't mind giving up some yardage, but you can't give up the big chunk plays and the touchdown passes that they have given up. Like, it's been ridiculous, the number of passes over 35 yards. I think five games in a row.
Six now. Six,
going back to even last season.
Yep.
Six games in a row that they keep giving up, not only big plays, but big plays that that are scoring plays. So Drew Brees, though, is playing at a level that I haven't seen many quarterbacks play at. He's so accurate with the football. Him and Sean Payton being in sync, and the Kamara-Michael Thomas combination coming out of the backfield, throwing the ball down the field, I believe it's a special combination, and the NFL is going to have to get used to them and try to take them out of the game if they're going to have success against the Saints.
Brees is having the best start to a season he's ever had, and this is one of the greatest quarterbacks ever we're talking about. The problem for the Saints is their pass defense has been so bad, they are turning every quarterback they play into Drew Brees. So they don't – their defense has been so bad this year, they don't have an edge at the quarterback position because their defense is allowing the other guy to be Drew Brees.
So if we do like a tail of the tape.
A tail of the tape, I got it. Brees, 8 touchdowns, 0 picks. Their opponents, 10 touchdowns, 1 pick. Passer rating for Brees, 122. Opponents, 141.
Whoa.
They're allowing.
And they have a game in there with Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
Playing in there.
Absolutely right. They're allowing 11 yards per pass attempt. Not per pass completion, per pass attempt. The Saints' pass defense numbers are horrifying. They have faced the fourth fewest total passes, but given up the fourth most yards. 36% of pass attempts against the Saints have gone for at least 15 yards. One out of three is going for a big play. Like, it is back to, unfortunately, early on, same old Saints, which is Brees is awesome. We've got good weapons, I think, because of Thomas and when Ingram comes back and Kamara, maybe some of the best weapons he's had, but they're going to have to go score 35 to have a shot in these games until something changes defensively.
Is that personnel or is that coaching? Take the injuries out of it. Is that something that's fixable during the season or are they going to have to go out and get guys next year?
Well, I met with the staff and I met with the players. Now, do they have some talented players? Yeah, they have some talented young players, but right now they don't have players playing with a lot of confidence. P.J. Williams, a corner that they started, he hadn't started week one and two. Crawley had started at the left cornerback spot for them. They benched Crawley. P.J., they bench him during the Atlanta game. We saw the rookie from Alabama carve him up pretty good. He had three
Calvin
touchdowns.
Ridley.
Yeah, so they had to bench him, and they had to go back to Crawley. But you can't hide guys. If P.J.'s dressed, you got to put him in the nickel somewhere. Then you lose Patrick Robinson. So, man, they are struggling right now. Dennis Allen believes that they need to. They're a young group, but they're not a great practice group. So this is one of them type of things is if – the coaching staff is looking for them to practice better than what they've practiced. So you think when they get to the game, that's how they've looked in practice. So until they become a better practice team, it's a young group led by Marshawn Lattimore last year, Pro Bowl in his rookie season.
What's going on with him?
He's lost his confidence. He didn't have a good training camp. And he's had a horrible three games. He started off the season awful against Evans of Tampa Bay. They put him one-on-one the way he traveled around with Evans. Evans chewed him up. So then Cleveland didn't have the deep threat. But then in last week's game, you could see the defense coordinator not putting him in as much man-to-man, playing a little more conservative. So I think that a very, very talented player is trying to find his way in the league after having a lot of success. But realizing this is a lot harder than it was potentially my rookie year, and he's struggling in year number two.
I went into this year believing Cam Jordan's the best player on this defense, despite Marshawn Lattimore's success at winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. You were with him last week. Is Lattimore the most important guy on the defense?
Yeah, because Cam, they can double up on him. If Lattimore is a stud, they can pretty much negate a big game on one side of the field, and then you could help out Crawley. You could help out P.J. Williams. You could play a lot of combination coverages. But right now, Dennis Allen doesn't have anything that he can go to as a staple defense. Yes, Cam Jordan, he should be considered the best player. But this defense goes the way Marshawn Lattimore goes, all right? So he is kind of the heartbeat and the pulse of the defense, even though Cam Jordan has been way more consistent.
The only saving grace for the Saints is they do have experience dealing with this. Since Drew Brees got there, they have given up 30 or more points 60 times. For context, in that same time frame, Brady's had to deal with his defense doing that 24 times. Peyton Manning, who I know hasn't played the last couple of years, 20 total times. Like Big Ben, 29 times.
What's the Saints, 60?
60 times they've given up at least 30 points since Drew Brees been their quarterback.
Big opportunity this weekend. Does the Saints defense turn Eli Manning into Peyton Manning? Based on your
absolutely.
On your quarterback ratings and everything. So big opportunity for the Saints. If they beat the Giants, though, with this defense playing at this historically bad pace, they still would be 3-1, only losing the opening week to Tampa Bay.
Right.
And Fitzy was on fire.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up on the other side, what will we learn about the Rams tomorrow night against the Vikings? That's next on First Things First. All right, we're now going viral here on First Things First. Syracuse football is off to the first 4-0 start since the 1991 season, and they've got a big matchup this weekend against Clemson. However, the football team, not the only ones doing big things on campus. Check this out. Twitter user Joe Lee posted a plaque of our guy Nick Wright. They named the radio studio after you, Nick. How nice is that?
That's good stuff.
That's very nice you guys put on the show. Thank you. This is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me professionally.
Seriously, Nick.
What? Y'all walking out? You can't even walk out. I don't think y'all.
The dramatic effect, it would have been better.
I mean, on a personal
If that's the best, then we're getting ready to be the worst.
That's at WAR, which is the radio station, the NPR station on campus that Costas and Albert and Tirico and a lot of guys, Syracuse guys, work there. And the talk show studio, they named after me. I really appreciate his putting on the show. That's a really cool thing.
That's awesome. That's tremendous, tremendous honor.
That's a lot.
Unbelievable. Thank you. By the way, America, Jenna was going to find a reason to stand up during today's show because of the dress she's wearing.
Because of the shirt that I'm wearing.
For whatever reason.
Jenna got here in a rush.
Jenna was going to find a reason to be so mad.
Okay. It didn't take long. We are a half hour in.
She's been eating chickpeas for a reason.
18 straight months. Time for stories to start your morning.
It ain't bragging if you got it, though, Nick.
Love the guys I work with. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. When Baker Mayfield came in to relieve Tyrod Taylor in the Jets game Thursday night, nobody was surprised. Nobody except the entire Jets defense. Jets safety Jamal Adams said they were not prepared for Baker Mayfield. See, are you surprised by this?
No, I'm not surprised. Now, I predicted that Baker Mayfield would go in this game because I know Todd Haley, and I saw how he had to call plays. So I could read the writing on the wall. Todd and him were trying to protect him. Now, he got nicked, but I believe he was going to get benched because he was not playing the type of quarterback that Todd Haley and Hugh require to run their offense. So, no, I'm not that surprised. I'm more surprised that Jamal admitted it.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe they would have spent a little time preparing for the possibility of playing Baker if this game were on a Sunday. But they were playing on a Thursday. Well, so you don't.
It's a combination of both. They were in a tough spot. It's early in the season, and nothing had come out of Cleveland that Baker might play.
Right. And so the admitting it is.
You just can't tell the truth in that kind of
right.
situation.
You got to keep that to yourself.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, moving on to golf. After Tiger Woods' win at the Tour Championship, Phil Mickelson said, "It is the best I've ever seen him swing the club," which doesn't fare well for their Thanksgiving one-on-one matchup. See, how would you grade Tiger's game right now as we sit?
His game is fairly amazing. Now, when Tiger was at his peak, there weren't 10 other guys that could challenge him week in and week out. Now, with all the great young players we have throughout the world, I believe the competition is stiffer now. Tiger's changed his swing like 4 or 5 times, but I believe there was two things that really moved this forward for Tiger. One was the technology that he put in his driver, the TaylorMade, that he is hitting absolutely the straightest driver of the golf ball at any other point in his career. And sometimes you got to do this. You have a good relationship with someone, but you got to put your foot down just to let them know that you're serious. Tiger put that putter he did, he put her in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Nice.
And then she realized she had a good thing and said, "Let me out of here. I'm willing to fight for this relationship." So he got back together with her, and now they're all warm and fuzzy.
Oh, now
so
I understand.
That driver And that putter had to bring the old girl back into the relationship.
Yep. It happens sometimes.
And on Phil's side of things, I think I know what Phil's doing here. Phil's got that match with Tiger, that $10 million pay-per-view. Phil was about a plus 160 dog before this weekend. Middle of this weekend was about plus 180. After Tiger won, he was plus 220. I think Phil's just trying to build Tiger up so Phil can bet on himself at like 3-1.
That's definitely on the board.
Oh, yeah, because Phil's going to be gambling while he's gambling and gambling.
Don't put them in the Ryder Cup together because they're going to be, we got to play against the Europeans.
Absolutely.
All right, they're going to be gambling against each other during the match.
Right, we don't need that.
All right, with all eyes on LeBron James at Lakers Media Day, Luke Walton shifted the focus by announcing Rajon Rondo will be the Lakers starting point guard, to which reporters said, all right, that's great, but what about LeBron? I'm kidding. This, as Lonzo Ball continues to recover from offseason knee surgery, what do you think, Nick, good decision to go with Rondo over Lonzo?
Yeah, I think that if Lonzo were fully healthy, this wouldn't be happening, but because he's not, this is why you sign Rajon Rondo.
Yes.
So you can have better than replacement quality point guard play while Lonzo's recovering. It is interesting, once Lonzo is fully healthy, how quickly and easily Rondo relinquishes that starting job. But, yeah, this is a no-brainer for the Lakers.
Yeah, Lonzo's going to be the starting point guard. But I like Magic Johnson, and I like his imprint that he's making on Lonzo. But he also, you can only do so much from the front office. Let's bring in someone that's going to be with him every day. So Magic trust Rondo to be able to groom, because Magic said one day this guy's jersey will be in the rafters in L.A. So let me bring in someone else who can help me between the front office, having Rondo in the locker room on the road. I believe that's part of Magic Johnson's master plan to help Lonzo.
All right. Moving on, when you win back-to-back championships and finals MVPs, you can pretty much do what you want, which means that Kevin Durant's time with the Warriors might be, could be, possibly numbered. When asked about free agency, Durant said, quote, we will see what happens next year. Nick, do you expect Kevin Durant to stay with the Warriors after this season?
Let me flip a coin here.
I mean, really?
No, I don't. I think it's 50-50. I think it is. I think right now, Durant, I don't think Durant knows. I think he's got Rich Kleinman, who's his business partner, who they do a lot of their, they just announced a TV series with, does a podcast series with, does investments with. I think he's pulling on him. Hey, man, you stay one more year in Oakland. It's not Oakland anymore. It's San Francisco. It's the billionaire's row at center court. It's a chance to potentially four-peat. And then he's got the Twitter side of him saying, man, I'm going to show these fools I can do this on my own. I can go win a championship in New York. I can go team up with a guy like either Jimmy Butler or Kyrie Irving and shift the balance of power. So I think there's going to be significant player movement this offseason. Kyrie, Jimmy Butler, Durant. People are going to start talking about Anthony Davis, even though I still think New Orleans will hold on to him with dear life. A lot of these guys are going to be moving. I'm not trying to hedge my bet here. I really think it is right now about a 50-50 proposition. I think anyone acting like Durant's made up his mind, I don't think that's the case. But you absolutely should not dismiss the very real possibility that even if they three-peat, he leaves.
Is there any possibility that he might go to Los Angeles with LeBron?
I think that's absolutely on the board. I think the reason the Lakers fought so hard to get Luol Deng to shave exactly enough money off his salary to where they could fit in a true max deal for Kevin Durant was to leave that window open. Because they got Luol Deng to shave enough money off. It wasn't that it created a hole for Kawhi. Durant can make more than Kawhi. So they got it to where Kawhi could fit in there, obviously, but also Kevin Durant could.
But if the reason Kevin Durant would leave Golden State would be to see if he can go do this sort of on his own, if you will, Why would the Lakers even be an option for him?
Yeah, see, I think it's very, very complicated. I think Kevin Durant, he's in a tough spot as far as what his legacy is going to be.
Right.
Any normal athlete that we've seen typically would just be like, no, I'm staying here. I like my situation here. It's very, very comfortable for me. I don't know why he would want to leave. But for me, he's earned that right, just like at OKC. It was like, he's joining Golden State. I couldn't hate on it because he earned the right to. He's gone there. He's done great. But I still think there's other goals as far as basketball. And what is ultimately are they going to say about Kevin Durant? And the opportunity, if they were to win this year, and the chance to four-peat, I just think that's just hard to turn down. But the problem is, in Golden State, if he stays there, how much credit ultimately does he get? Because it's different now. The rules are different now. Once he decided to join Steph and Clay and Dre and them, how we analyze him have been totally different. And I just don't know if staying there is the best basketball challenge for him. Because he has to determine that. And I think that there's something pulling at him to what makes him better from a basketball standpoint. And to staying at Golden State for a chance to four-peat with this great team that they have. Is that the thing that does it?
And, I mean, Clay was asked about his pending free agency. And Clay was very clear. Man, people leave teams to try to get the situation I've got. I love it here. I'm staying here. Now, his mind could change, but he was very clear. Durant's asked about it, and he's like, I take everything year by year. And he has earned that right. Jenna, your question is a great one, which is the only mountain Durant has left to climb is the LeBron mountain, is becoming the best player in the world. You would think the only way he would remove the ability to climb that mountain is by teaming up with him.
Yes.
I think sometimes we try to assign logical behavior to guys by what we would consider logical behavior mm-hmm. to guys that have not always acted logically. I still to this day have Boston fans sending me, because Kyrie had a quote this week talking about how much he loves it there, say you still think Kyrie might leave, man? Do people not remember the quotes he had
At the finals
about loving Cleveland, about wanting to be in Cleveland? Oh, he's got this great situation. He had a great situation in Cleveland with the best player in the world and left. Like, a lot of these guys, we try to say, what would we do?
Right.
I from talking to people in the league, and I don't mean reporters. I mean people close to the players. They all believe it is absolutely on the board that Durant could go a bunch of different places. I had somebody say to me the other day that they think he's open to going back to Oklahoma City. Now, that one would shock me, but I can't dismiss any possibility because Durant, the other thing with Durant is, while the Lakers can give him max money, he, along with LeBron and Steph, are the three guys in this league that make so much money non-basketball related, that they don't have to make any financial decisions based on a max salary slot.
Quickly, though, if he does go, where do you think he might end up?
If he leaves, I think New York is the most likely option. I think the Lakers are the second most likely option if he leaves.
Interesting. All right, let's get back to some football now. There are three undefeated teams left in the NFL, and the Rams are one of them. Off to a very hot start, as we all thought. But the teams that have beaten them, they've got a combined 1-8 record this season, and the Rams are dealing with a banged-up secondary. So a true test Thursday night versus the Vikings is exactly what the team needs. Just ask Rams head coach Sean McVay.
This week provides a great challenge, going against an excellent team, really sound in all three phases. They have great players. They're very well coached. A team that went deep into the playoffs last year, and they're going to be ready to go, and certainly we have to as well. And it's just like anything else. I thought our guys did some good things, but as coaches, first and foremost, and then as players, there's things that we can look at and see if we can improve upon on a short week.
All right, what is the biggest challenge, CC, that the Vikings defense presents this high-powered Rams offense Thursday night?
Well, the Vikings, they're good at every level. They have Pro Bowl players at every level. They play a number of different coverages. They can play man-to-man. I don't know if there's one wide receiver that they would decide to match up with Xavier Rhodes all over the field. So I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to play right and left.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I thought they might have Rhodes follow Cooks. You don't think they're going to do that?
This is the problem. They do so much motion. They do so many things before the snap. The Rams, they can get you confused. You can get guys running in each other. You can get a lot of natural picks. They want you to play man-to-man when they do that. No, you have to check into zone, make things a little more simpler. Man, you got to get after Jared Goff. Like, you have to make him win the game. I would put a lot of people to line of scrimmage to give McVay the impression that he can't run the football. And you got to make Jared Goff be able to beat you as a defense. Also, Mike Zimmer in his tenure there with the Minnesota Vikings going against rookie quarterbacks, which he went against last week in Buffalo. He was number one in the league as far as the worst passing percentage, yards, lack of touchdowns, completions. Man, they had success against it. So you can expect this Vikings defense to build a bounce back against the Rams. You have to make this Rams offense one-dimensional, and you have to force Jared Goff to be able to beat you. You can't allow them to run the football with Todd Gurley because that sets up the play-action pass, and then they just have so many things that they can do to you.
And they got to look at, if you're the Vikings, what you did last year. I know the Rams are better than they were last year, but last year this was a good team. They played last year. The Rams got the opening kickoff, drove right down the field, scored a touchdown, did not score another point for the next 55 minutes. The rest of that football game, lost 24-7. The Vikings forced Todd Gurley into his worst game of the year, 15 carries for 37 yards, forced Jared Goff into his second worst game of the year. And when I say the Rams are better this year than last year, they added Brandon Cooks on offense, but most of those other additions are defensively. And two of those additions aren't playing this weekend. Mm-hmm. In Peters and Aqib Talib, or aren't playing tomorrow, I should say. So these are two teams that are very similar to the teams they had on the field last year, except, of course, the Vikings have a giant upgrade at quarterback from Case to Kirk Cousins, assuming Kirk Cousins can hold on to the football.
Question for you. Tell me what the week has been like for the Vikings coming off the loss they had, a surprising loss. Like, what is the locker room like? What is prep like, especially when now you're getting ready for a team that you really do think is at that level?
I think that the Vikings, with the great expectations that they had, they'll look at the last 2 weeks in September to help kind of crystallize their season. They're struggling. We know their offensive line. They had a couple injuries. They have Pat Eflin, the center, who didn't play the first couple games. He was active last week, so he started the season on PUP. Now he's a good center. Is he ready for Sue and Donald? And he's not 100%. Had a significant injury in last year's playoff game that really had made his offseason full of rehab. So they have to be able to contain that middle part of the defense. And outside, Stephon Diggs, you're paying him a lot of money. Thielen, he's making good money. They have to be able to dominate the football game going against backups on the outside, with the Rams having both of their corners sidelined in this game. So, yes, we know that Dalvin Cook didn't play last week, hamstring. He's going to be up in tomorrow's game. So, yeah, you have to be able to run the ball. But ultimately, if they're going to win, they got to be able to throw the ball and throw it outside.
And the taking advantage of the backup corners is the key for the Vikings offense. I totally agree with you. Like, that is where that with Diggs and Thielen, they should have a decided advantage. But I also, I think you made a really interesting point when we look at the Vikings team, but they're one of four teams that has played a five-quarter game this year. And we have to take with a bit of a grain of salt the result the week after. Four times this year there's been four teams have played an overtime game to a tie. So they had to play a 70-minute football game. All four of those teams lost the following week. None of them seemed to be ready the following week. The Vikings, that is what they dealt with this past week against Buffalo after the tie against the Green Bay Packers.
And for the Vikings, sometimes it's problems on the field, but I can see them having problems with Griffin this week, where they asked him to get a mental evaluation. I think that trickled into what they did. Seeing one of their teammates struggle, right now he's having a mental health issue. Where he's going to be and when he's going to be back with the team. If he is going to be back with the team this season, I think that team was dealing with that. I think that's what we saw in the Buffalo game, because I was watching the score. I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah.
They have a lot of stuff going on with them. That's why I believe these last 2 weeks of September, on and off the field, will help them determine what type of season that they're going to have. So our prayers go out for Griffin, that he gets the type of help that he needs. But these type of things, especially on a short week, they really affect the guys that you do battle with on and off the field.
And people need to know who Everson Griffin is. He's been on the team 9 years. He's a captain.
Yes.
And there were some misreports in the local Minnesota media that trickled out, but he had an incident in the team hotel where people were very concerned about his mental well-being. So this is not only a teammate, but a guy who's been one of the longest tenured players, one of their best players,
yes,
who seemed to be in personal crisis 14 hours before they had to kick off against Buffalo. That seemed to have an effect on the game.
Back here, first things first, Eric Mangini in the house. Hey, Coach.
morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Good to see you.
Beautiful morning in New York City. Pouring rain.
I'm trying to stop his traditional handshake. It's not working.
Nope.
But he did try.
He did try. We had a whole talk about it. It's not
Coach, it took one sentence for the Giants to tell the world that they still believed in Eli Manning, and the sentence went like this. With the second overall pick, the New York Giants select a running back. This is year 15 for the 37-year-old Eli, off to a slow 1-2 start with only 3 passing touchdowns. Fans wondering if Big Blue made a big mistake. Head coach Pat Shurmur doesn't think so, saying, quote, I believe in him. Our quarterback needs to know we believe in him. Coach, what do you think of Eli and the Giants' offense through 3 games so far?
Well, at my kids' school, they have this grading system where you either exceed expectations, you meet expectations, or they have a really nice way of saying you're not, and they say you're emerging. And I think the offense when I saw that, I thought, oh, what a really polite way to say they need to work a lot harder.
Yeah.
So I think we're at the point where they're emerging, and there were a lot of positive things from this past weekend. You know, dealing with the injury to the center that they had and having to make that switch, then making the switch with Eric Flowers, I think that shows that they're trying to try new things and push things forward. I like the fact that Odell was involved the way that he was involved, and that should continue to grow, and Saquon Barkley made a more meaningful impact and provided balance to the offense that they've been looking for. And I'm a believer in Eli Manning as well. I think that he's got a lot of good football ahead of him. They've got to continue to figure out a way to slow down the sacks. Another 4-sack game. I think they're 5th in the league in sacks. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. And in fairness to them, it is a new head coach. It is a new offensive coordinator. It is a new system. It is a new approach. And this early part of the season is where a lot of teams are emerging one way or the other.
And if they don't play well against the Saints, because Coach, you know, being trained in New England, and you know that with the new coaching, with the new collective bargaining agreement, well, it's not that new, but how they train players, you need 3 or 4 games during the regular season to start developing your team, and then you start to see, man, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What do I have to work with? So I'm an Eli fan also. I believe that they did the right thing by going with Barkley to build, because Eli should be able to play, given where Drew Brees is health-wise, given what Tom Brady has shown us. Eli is a better athlete than people think, and he's an Iron Man. He's not going to get hurt. I believe they got him for another 2 or 3 years. Now, if he doesn't play accurate, if he doesn't throw the football accurate, then there's no excuse for him. The Saints should be a great test because they are struggling. And if they cannot throw the ball successfully, if they can't block them successfully, it lets them know they're going to struggle. Washington has a better defense than the Saints. Philadelphia, we know what they bring at you from a front 7 standpoint. In Dallas,
We saw them struggle against Dallas. Yep.
Absolutely. So it's going to be a hard road to be able to get to the playoff in that tough NFC. They should be able to light up the Saints. And if they don't, and if Eli can't light up his hometown team, then it is a problem for the Giants going forward.
Well, and that's what we were talking about when we were discussing the Saints' pass defense. The Saints this year have turned every quarterback they've played into on the season into Drew Brees. They're playing against Drew Brees every week on average because of their pass defense. It's why a team, and I understand they're still 2-1, and like the Saints might pull themselves out of this, but last year they looked different because Marshawn Lattimore, as a rookie, after week 1 last year, was excellent moving forward. This year, it's a near perfect passer rating when targeting Marshawn Lattimore. The corner opposite him had been benched and then put back in the lineup. They're dealing with an injury now. They have real questions at secondary, which is why for the Giants took advantage of a Texans team that is bad defensively. They did get after the quarterback you had mentioned. Listen, as bad as we think Eric Flowers is, the guy who's behind him must be worse.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, Chad Wheeler made J.J. Watt get in the time machine this week, and they bench Eric Flowers.
Yeah, but I think they're happy with that move. Don't you think they're going to keep Flowers off? Like, this looks like it's a move moving forward. I bet you that if you ask them, they'd be happy with the move to move Flowers off. They still walked away with a win.
They did walk away with a win, but I watched that game since it was the TV setup I have. We have one just local game on. That was the Giants game. It was the only local game on, so I had my eye on that particularly throughout. Chad Wheeler got up. J.J. Watt has not had – he had 1.5 sacks in the last 3 years. He had 3 sacks on Sunday. So maybe they will stick with it, Jenna. I'm just saying it was trial by fire for Wheeler. But the overarching point is this Giants team has not scored 30 points since 2015. If they're they haven't scored 30 points. That includes their playoff year since 2015. If they're going to do it, yeah, the Saints, it doesn't necessarily mean you win, but the Saints team is a team you should be able to move the ball on.
And I've been disappointed with the Giants offense because they did do a lot of things to address problems that they had. They go out and they get Nate Solder. They draft the guard from UTEP, right? So they address some of those things. They moved Eric Flowers over to right tackle, which I thought was the right idea, and now they're trying to make another move. They've got an elite receiver. I know a receiver that you love and love probably more than any other receiver in the NFL, who should be explosive, who should be generating big plays. They've got a good tight end, and now they draft a running back, which they say is a once-in-a-generational talent. So you're expecting to see bigger things than what we've seen to this point. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that this is part of understanding who you are and how they have to operate. But we should be getting more than we're getting.
How long is the getting to know who you are, getting to figure out what your identity is? And if it's not that, is it really, are all signs pointing towards their offensive line? Because they seem to have all the other pieces in place. If you believe Eli Manning still has it, is accurate and no, ready
well,
to go.
Well, I'm a big believer in to whom much is given, much is expected. And when you give the world to Odell Beckham and you pay him like that, then you need to produce like that. And when you draft a guy like Saquon Barkley with the number two pick in the draft, he needs to produce at a high level. It's very easy to blame the offensive line. And oftentimes, they're the sacks that they allow, and then there's sacks that the quarterback holds the ball too long, the quarterback moves left or right in the pocket and puts them in a bad position. And we just all want to say, well, it's the offensive line's fault. It's a collective thing. And those guys that have been given a lot need to perform at a higher level than they have to this point.
Saquon and Odell are averaging a combined 210 yards from scrimmage per game. Saquon's at 120, Odell's at 90. And so Odell, I'm certain, and I credit to him for not making an issue of it, he would like to get in the end zone more. He hadn't scored yet this year. I think Odell's played well. I've been very...
And Antonio Brown caught a two-yard hitching out in the end zone.
You're absolutely right. And Antonio...
make people miss.
And Odell has in his history. It's why he scored more touchdowns through the first 40 games of his career than every player in the league except for, I think, five guys receiving. So, like, I'm not worried that Odell's going to be able to get in the end zone. I also have been very critical of Eli. There's only one game this year I thought Eli played really poorly. That was their first game of the year. I thought against Dallas, even though they couldn't score, Eli was under constant duress and took care of the football. And I thought last week against Houston he played well. But as far as your question, Jenna, about how much time do we give them, it can get late early for the Giants. They start out 1-2, and after New Orleans, Carolina, Philly, Atlanta, Washington, leading into the bye. Like, this is an opportunity to get the offense going and to get back to 500 for the first quarter of the season.
Getting back to 500 is very important. The teams that are good teams, Jenna, to answer your question, they're going to take the first 2 to 4 weeks and be like, okay, this is what we have. We're going to adjust and move forward. But the teams that aren't that good and teams that are going to be around 800, what they'll do is after 4 weeks be like, hey, man, I don't know what we have. Let's take another 4 weeks. And so they'll be at the midway point in the season trying to make those corrections. Hey, at the midway point, we're 3-5. Okay, how can we get 6-2 to close it? So what they'll do is they'll shift their focus. It should be on these first four games because training camp is not that physical. Teams change with injuries. The good teams, after 4 weeks, though, they pretty much know what they want to do, and they try to get to that level week after week.
And the good teams, like Chris said, are going to assess where they are. They're going to assess what the problems are. They're going to have a plan in place to fix the problems. And then there's going to be those other teams that say, we do what they do, and the coaching points are, we got to play better. Okay, congratulations. Like telling a hitter, hit the ball. Look, give them some ideas on how to do those things.
Make better points. Have hot takes.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Do
Thanks,
something.
Yeah, don't stutter.
Got to take a break. Coming up, are the Patriots in trouble against the Dolphins? That's next.
Hey, be nice.
Back here, first things first, with Eric Mangini. Coaches, you already know the New England Patriots are 1-2 for the first time since 2012. They sit at the bottom of the AFC East. The Miami Dolphins are 3-0 for the first time since 2013. They sit at the top of the AFC East. Patriots host the Dolphins on Sunday. Hey, No one here is overreacting. We're just stating facts. If you ask Dolphins head coach Adam Gase, he'll tell you it's too early to look at records right now. So, Coach Mangini, what challenges do the 3-0 Dolphins pose for a Patriots team that, by all accounts, are struggling right now a little bit?
Well, this is one time where the group in Philadelphia who says it's not fun in New England is absolutely right. This is not this is not going to be a fun week there at all, and probably at different levels than of not fun than we've seen in a while. But they are going to address the issues at hand. And I understand exactly what Adam says. The challenge with playing New England and what makes New England effective is each week is its own box. And they're going to do the things that hurt Miami. They're going to take away the things that Miami does well. They can't look at the first three games and say, okay, New England is going to play us this way. It's going to be very different. I do think that Miami faces a challenge. They haven't won there in a decade. I think the last time was a Wildcat game. So being able to go up there and actually beat New England in New England, it's hard, and it's been really hard for Miami to do. It's going to be interesting to see how New England addresses their third down problem. They've had a problem offensively with third down through the first three games. Really, last year they struggled to some degree on third down, and defensively they've got the same issue. And to me, that's what has to get taken care of from a bigger scheme perspective.
Well, just quickly, when you say it's not fun in New England, give us a little more color to that. I mean, what's the one thing they are really focused on? Is there anything that changes this week? Like, what's the mood and the atmosphere like there?
Well, there is not going to be a slight problem that's not addressed. Like, sometimes you may gloss over problems that are here at the bottom of the pile.
Not this week.
No, it's going to be ongoing, consistent, absolute overhaul of every single issue to the point of nauseam.
Yeah, I think that I don't think fans understand how depressed the players are winning and losing games. I think fans think that because people are getting paid a lot of money that, oh, they're just happy. And there's certain environments where the expectations are high, that being Pittsburgh, that being Green Bay, that being New England. They're not like other teams. The other teams, yeah, they can lose some games. These teams, that's why we talk about Pittsburgh, Arthur, because the expectations in the building. A week like this in New England would start like this. 15 ugly plays where guys look bad. That included Tom Brady, a lot of Tom Brady looking bad, and the coaches chewing out guys with missed assignments. Now, the players already have a certain amount of trepidation approaching the building because we know, man, your guy's going to chew you out. I used to tell Randy Moss this, listen, bro, today the receiving coach, he's going to chew us out because why? He got chewed out in his meeting. So, man, and it comes downhill.
Trickles.
So the amount of detail to just the smallest things, what you're having for lunch, how much water you're going to drink.
That much detail.
Oh, absolutely, because, man, the coaches make it miserable for you. Every little detail. What's your split supposed to be? I'm supposed to be 2 yards outside the number. Well, why aren't you there, Chris? So everything gets blown out of proportion. The players know what's at stake. It's almost like you're preparing for a playoff game. That's the level of intensity that players put into it. And New England, it's blown up even more because that's what they do on a regular basis, Nick.
Well, here's what the Pats, one of the things they have going for them this week. They don't lose divisional home games. They just don't. Since 07, Brady's played 28 of them. They're 27-1. 27-1 at home against their division. Dolphins, Jets, Buffalo, they all come to New England once a year. They all go home with an L once a year.
Not that it's that hard against those three teams.
That's what they have going for them. I heard people this week saying Ryan Tannehill's never won in New England. Man, none of these quarterbacks won in New England. Like, whether they were rookies or not, none of them win in New England. Here's what the Dolphins, though, can do. Because I trust the Pats, despite the struggles offensively the last few weeks, to be able to scheme themselves an offense. Man, you cannot scheme yourselves defensive speed. And see, you pointed this out to me after you called that Dolphins game. Because I went into the year thinking the Dolphins, when I was doing my little schedule stuff, Coach, I was looking at whoever was playing the Dolphins. Like, an easy win for them, easy win for them. I didn't think Dolphins were going to be good. You came back and said, not only are the Dolphins better than I thought they were, but I have drastically underestimated their speed. About that they have tried to do almost a Kansas City Chiefs light version of – spark scores, guys that can jump and run, quickness. And I looked at it this morning. Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson, Devontae Parker, who's back now, Jakeem Grant, and Kenyon Drake. That's four wide receivers and a running back. They are all 4.4 or faster.
Yes.
All of those guys are 4.4 or 4.3 guys. The one thing that I think New England right now defensively lacks as much as almost any team in the league is speed. Like, that can be an equalizer of a lot of things. If you just can't cover guys out of the backfield, can't cover guys deep downfield, that's one area I think Miami has a huge edge.
Well, look, New England's never been, or historically, we've never been a fast team. We've been a big team, and it's built on size. Mm-hmm. And look, if you're a big team, you try to operate in a phone booth, and you try to, you don't try to dance, mm-hmm. you try to punch. And New England is going to set it up so that this becomes more of a punching puncher's fight than a dancing fight, and that's going to be the challenge. Now, as quietly as it's kept, I think Ryan Tannehill is 10-1 or
his
11,
last 11 starts.
11 yes. and one.
10-1. You got it.
It's which is pretty impressive and really not talked about very much. And then Miami's done an excellent job of creating turnovers. I think they're second in the league right now in turnovers. So those two things are going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Frank Gore and Tannehill, I believe, become a key part to this game. Their offensive line's underrated. I knew their speed at the wide receiver was underrated. You mentioned they're getting potentially their best wide receiver, Devontae Parker. It's one of those make or break years for him. I look at this team, and I'm not gonna blow this out of proportion. In 1998, we had a game on a Monday night against the Green Bay Packers, and it was raining sideways in that game. And Randy Moss and I knew we had to convince the offensive coordinator in pregame warmup. We were making ridiculous catches. It was raining sideways. Billick was like, "Man, we gotta run the ball." We were like, "No, coach, we're gonna send the message on Monday night," and me and Moss torched Green Bay. And that was the message we sent to Brett Favre in Green Bay, that this Vikings team was different. That ended up being a special year. If the Dolphins are going to have a special year, it starts at 1 o'clock in Foxborough, because I believe that Adam Case, this is the best team that he's had. Now, he's flying under the radar. People don't realize, but this could be a message game for him with that offense, with Tannehill running it. And I believe the knockout punch can be Gore. All right, Gore has had a fabulous career. He's brought him there. He's from Miami. And he's the type of thing, if you get the lead late in the games with that big offensive line, let's get a ball to Gore to be able to finish him off. Statement game for the Dolphins this week against the Pats.
Just to follow up on Frank Gore coaching him in San Francisco, he's one of those guys, he's not intimidated by anything. He's not intimidated by Foxborough. He's not intimidated by not winning there in 10 years. He's the type of guy that gets out in front of everybody else and says, "You know, this doesn't matter. Follow me." And I think that is a positive thing.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.